We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. We are looking at the King's Sermon, and when I say that, I refer, of course, to what's commonly known as the Sermon on the Mount. This week we're looking at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8, where it says, "Blessed are the pure in heart." This is the sixth beatitude that we have come across so far. Blessed are the pure in heart. Now, in all honesty, this has probably been the most difficult message from the Beatitudes that I've had to put together so far. Difficult because there's so much depth and meaning that's compacted into this brief statement. There's so many angles from which we could approach this verse, and we don't have enough time to do that, but even if we did, we still could not exhaust the truths and the great things that are found in the statement that it says here, "Blessed are the pure in heart." I mean, that just, it means so much. This beatitude holds in it the hope and the desire of all mankind, and especially that of every Christian. It holds the hope that one day we'll be able to see God. Now, I want us to look at that verse. Remember that every beatitude that we have, first of all, it gives us a description of those who are blessed, those who are accepted of God, those who are happy, those who have received those blessings of God. And it tells us what are required to be a blessed person. And we've seen that, first of all, the first thing that's required is that we're poor in spirit. If you want to be blessed, then you need to be poor in spirit. The second one is to those that mourn. The next one is to those who are meek. Then we have, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. And then, of course, last week we looked at blessed are the merciful, and this week it's those who are pure in heart. So each beatitude has with it a requirement for living a blessed life. But then after that, there's also a blessing that we see that's extended to each one. And tagged on to the end of each beatitude is a blessing, or it's something to look forward to for those who will make the sacrifices that is needed in order to live the way that Jesus is explaining and expressing here in these verses. And in verse 8 is no different here. He says, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Why are they blessed? For they shall see God. Isn't that what we all want? I mean, really, if we think about it, that's the whole attraction to heaven. It should be, anyway. Not just to have a big mansion or to see streets of gold or because it's the opposite of hell. But I mean, the whole attraction to heaven should be that we'll see God. That finally, we'll be able to see Him. Oh, the day when we're finally rid of this life and you're able to stand face to face with God, when all of our ponderings and our curiosity of God and heaven will finally become our reality as we behold Him in all of His glory. And what warmth and comfort this thought brings to our minds as we think about that if we are those who are pure in heart, that one day we will be able to see God. Yet how chilling it is when we do consider the prerequisite of this sight of God, because it says here, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Again, why are they blessed? Because they shall see God. Now, we all like the last part. We like the "they shall see God" part, but what is scary and what is fearful, and I think what is supposed to invoke thought and examination into our own lives, is when it says the ones who are going to see God are these. It's the pure in heart. And really, we could almost translate it like this: blessed are the pure in heart, for they and they alone shall see God. This promise is not to everyone. The promise that they shall see God is to those who are, as it says here, pure in heart. This beatitude is so piercing because it does not merely call into question what we do, it calls into question what we are. And I want us to think about all the previous beatitudes that we've looked at so far. It talks about things that we should be doing, things that we should be, I guess, things that we should be conscious of and striving towards. And the first one is, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Well, if we're not poor in spirit, we need to be looking at how we do that, how that comes about. If we're not mourning over our sin, that's something that we need to be praying that God would give us the ability to do. If we're not meek, that's something that we need to be doing. We need to be meek. If we're not hungering and thirsting after righteousness, then that's something we need to ask God, of course, to help us to do. And if we're not being merciful to others, then that's something, again, that we must ask God to give us a change in our lives so that we can be merciful. But this beatitude is not about what we're doing. It's about what we are. And really, I think that is the focus of the whole of the Beatitudes, because we cannot do any of these things on our own. There has to be a change in who we are before any of these things are ever going to be manifested. If there has not been a change that takes place inside of me, in my heart, in my inner person, if there's not a change that has taken place in here, then I will never be poor in spirit or any of the other Beatitudes that we've looked at so far. And so this really gets down to the personal part of this fact that religion or righteousness or Christianity or being a follower of Jesus is not so much about what we do, it's about what we are. Now, there's no way that we can cover all that this statement means this morning, but over the next several minutes, we are going to attempt to at least just scrape the surface of what it means to be pure in heart. Now, first of all, what we'll do is, as we do with many of our Beatitudes so far and many of the things that we look at in different parts of the Bible, we're going to define the terms for just a moment. And there are a couple words here I want us to focus on very briefly in verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart. Now, we're going to go out of order here. We're actually going to take that word heart for a second. I know it's the last one in that phrase, but we're going to take it and look at the heart first. Now, a person's heart is primarily viewed as the seat of emotions. And, you know, we've all watched movies talked about, you know, love movies and things like that, and people falling in love, and the heart, you know, of course, you got to win someone's heart, or, you know, we've read books, or we've talked about ourselves, we've experienced in life things that tug at our heart, or things that move us, compassion that we feel, or things like that. And that's all generally associated with a person's heart. Matter of fact, we just last week celebrated a holiday called Valentine's Day, and Valentine's Day is all about love, right? And what is usually on all the Valentine's cards? A heart, right? Because we associate the heart with our feelings or with love or any of those other emotions. And so, as I said, a person's heart is primarily viewed as the seat of emotions. And that is true, but I want you to understand that the heart is more than that. The heart is more than just what you have feelings coming from. It's more than just that thing that produces love or compassion or whatever other emotion or feeling that we might have. The heart, in reality, is part of an inner system that is intertwined with what we call the heart, mind, and the soul. It's really hard to distinguish between the three, we have in the Scripture several times references to the heart, the mind, and the soul, and somehow they're all linked together, they're all wrapped up together, and what we could refer to as our inner person, our inner self. In Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37, Jesus revealed to us what the first and great commandment of the Bible is. When it says first, it's not necessarily the first one that was given, but that it is the first in importance. It's the most important. It's the biggest and greatest commandment of the whole Bible, and it's this. He says, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. I want you to notice, he didn't say, love God with all your religion. Love God with all your good works. Love God with all the things that you do and the things that you say. He didn't say that at all. He said the greatest commandment was, love the Lord in your heart. With all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. They're connected. Now, without getting too technical with things, really what we can say is that the heart is who we are. The heart is who we are. It is the center of our being. Whether you realize it or not, the Bible actually talks quite a bit about our hearts all through the Scriptures, all through the Old Testament and even on into the New Testament as well. It talks a lot about our hearts. And the one thing that we will notice, if you were to go and just, if you have a word search or a concordance or a Bible software that will let you do this, go in and look up the word heart. See how many times the word heart is mentioned in Scripture. And I one thing that you're going to notice as you begin reading down through and seeing all those different verses, you're going to notice immediately that the heart of man is not described as being something that is good or something that is in a positive sense. It's not described as something that is holy or righteous by nature. But what you're going to find as you read through all those verses about the heart is that it is something that is vile. It's something that's wicked. It's something that's dirty and twisted and perverted and all other sorts of adjectives that we could describe it with. Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9 sums it all up. He says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" That's your heart. I didn't hear any amens on that one. Nobody wants to agree with that, do they? Your heart. You. Your heart. The thing that leads you. The thing that guides you. That thing that you contemplate with and think on. The place where your motives come from. That is deceitful above everything else. It is desperately wicked. That's you. Yes, the heart has the capacity to produce things like love and joy and other good things, but it's also the home of the most dark and twisted thoughts and motives imaginable to us. Jesus says that out of the heart comes evil thoughts. Out of the heart comes murders. Out of the heart comes adultery. Out of the heart comes fornication. Out of the heart comes thefts and false witnesses and blasphemies. And he says those are the things which defile a man. It's not so much the outside action. It's not what we're doing outside. It's what's inside that defiles us. Are you saying then that the act of killing someone, it talks about murder here, the act of murder is not what defiles a man? Well, I guess you could say that that is something that's defiling, but where did that murder start from? It started in here, didn't it? You don't just randomly walk around and kill somebody. I mean, it starts here. It starts in the heart. It spoke about adultery and fornication, which is having marital relationships outside of the marital covenant. Well, the sin itself, the physical act, is of course sin. It is of course defiling. But let's keep in mind that if that action takes place, it started somewhere first. It started in here. See, the point is that no one's heart is pure by nature. And I know that none of us are hurrying to agree with this, because we all want to think that even though we know this about other people, we all want to think that our hearts might be the exception to this. But I want you just for a moment, I want you to think. I want you to think about those thoughts that come through your mind that you don't dare tell anybody else. Thoughts that may scare you. How could I think something like that? Thoughts that may run through, and maybe they're things that you would want to say to someone, or things that you would want to do to somebody in anger or whatever it may be. And those thoughts come through, and you stop for a second. You say, "No, I know that's wrong." And man, I can't believe I would think something like that. That something like that would even enter into my mind. You want to know why it does? Because it's in here. The heart is deceitful above all else. It's desperately wicked. And the last part of that verse says, and who can know it? Sometimes we don't even realize how twisted our heart is. I had a verse the other day in my just my personal devotional time, and this verse that really spoke to me that day was this. It says, just something to the gist that every thought of man is right in his own eyes. Every thought of man is right in his own eyes. It says, but the Lord ponders the heart. Even those thoughts sometimes that we think are pure, that we think are right, that we think are holy, it may not be about anything that's evil at all, but there may be some things that we're thinking about, things the ideas that we have or thoughts that we have that we think are so right and so holy, and God says that He searches the heart. He knows the true motive even behind those things. You see, if we're doing right to be seen by others, if we're doing right to call attention to ourselves, it's the wrong motive. Even though the things may be good, the actions may be good, the heart has still deceived itself. There's still wickedness there. Let's talk about that word pure for just a moment. Now, we would probably define the word pure as a synonym. That's not something you put on a honey bun. Okay? A synonym is two words that mean the same thing or mean close to the same thing. Now, what I said is that we would probably define the word pure as a synonym, as something that's like holiness or righteousness. And so when we read, blessed are the pure in heart, when we think pure, we're trying to define that in our own mind. We probably are going to come up with those words. Like, it means that the heart that is holy or the heart that is righteous is the one that will see God. But I think that it's beneficial for us to remove the religious tones to this word. And I know we're reading from the Scriptures. It's hard to do that. But let's remove the religious tones from this word pure. And let's look at its most basic meaning. If you were just to get an English dictionary and take out that dictionary and look up the word pure, you're going to find something similar to this. You're going to find that the word pure in its most basic form means this. It means that it's not mixed or adulterated with any other substance or material. If something is pure, then it has not been mixed or adulterated with any other substance or material. And so we could also say that pure means clean. What is pure gold? Well, believe it or not, if you were actually to go and pan for gold or mine for gold and you get gold and here you bring it out and here's this chunk of gold, that's not pure gold. There are all kinds of impurities and all kinds of things that are mixed in with this gold. And so they actually have, you know, the Bible even talks about this a little bit, the refiner's pot. And so they would go and they would heat this pot up and stick the gold in, and it would melt this gold. And as it melts the gold, it burns away the impurities. It burns away all the things that are mixed in with the gold itself. And so then as that is burned away, what you come out with is pure gold, gold that's not mixed with anything else. It'd be very easy for us to also talk about pure water. And, you know, the fact we've all seen water that's not pure before. Anybody ever drink well water? And it's very easy for us to imagine what water would look like that's not pure. Pure water is, what does it look like? Clear, right? It's clear. There's nothing mixed in with it. And so we could take a clear bottle of water and we could just take a tad of dirt or a tad of mud and drop it in it, and it's not pure water anymore, is it? Why? Because it's been mixed with things that are impure. It's been mixed with things that are not pure. And so pure means clean. It means that it's not mixed with anything else. Now, having looked at these terms, let's apply that to the verse that we find here today in Matthew chapter 5, verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart. Now, first, we must keep in mind that Judaism was full of people who were clean outwardly, but were wicked on the inside. To the religious zealots of the day, righteousness was all an outward show of works and ceremonies and traditions. In other words, if I do this, then that makes me pure or righteous. And whether you want to agree with it or not, that's what we find all over Christianity today, is that righteousness in the minds of most Christians today, righteousness is a form of outward works. It's a form of outward things that we do. And so we have limited what it means to be a Christian. We have limited to what it means to be righteous to things like, if I go to church on Sunday, then I am righteous. Or I'm a holy person. Or I'm a Christian. If I give tithes, then I am a Christian. And I think I've told you all this before, but there's actually something as the offering plate goes around. It's called a phantom drop. Anybody ever heard of that? And that's where either you don't have anything in your hand, but the offering plate comes around and you do this. Or it's where you get those envelopes and you fill it out, but there's nothing inside. Now, why is that turned in? Why do things like that happen? Because we want to appear outwardly to be righteous. Makes us feel better about ourselves. There's all kinds of things. There are people that think if I give to the poor, if I do this or do that, then that makes me a righteous person. If I read my Bible, if that's something that I do, I read my Bible, I pray every day, that makes me a righteous person. But I think what Jesus is trying to point out to very specifically is that it's not the outward works that makes a man righteous. And again, in the religion they were in Judaism, the religion of Israel, of course, they had many who their righteousness was all in the things that they did. We find all through the New Testament that Jesus often condemned the scribes and the Pharisees. Why? Because he said they were like whited tombs, whited sepulchers, which is a very good illustration to us. Because what they would do is they would take those boxes that they would place bodies in. We would call it a casket. Or they would take those tombs, whatever they're laying those bodies in, and on the outside they would decorate them, and they would put carvings in and make them look really pretty on the outside. They would wash them white. And what is white a symbol of? Purity, right? They would wash it white, but then when you walk in, it's full of decay. It's full of rottenness, filth, stench. And Jesus looked at those righteous people of the day, those Pharisees who wanted to act as though they were so righteous and so holy, and he looked at them and he said, you're like whited sepulchers. You're like whited tombs, who on the outside appear righteous to men, but on the inside are filled with dead men's bones, with rottenness, decay, wickedness, evil. You see, the sixth beatitude rids the Christian of any hope that righteousness is something that can be produced by the outward man. What Jesus says so plainly here is that true purity, true righteousness has to come from within. If he had said, blessed are those who are pure in actions, then there would have been a whole nation full of people who might have said, that's me. Because outwardly they were doing things that may have been right, but on the inside, in the heart, they had not yet been cleansed. But Jesus got straight to the point of the matter. He said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Pure in heart is not only the opposite of self-righteousness, but what I want us to understand today is that pure in heart is also the opposite of false righteousness. Let me make the distinction between these two, and this is just my own doings here, so this is just to fit our message today. But the distinction that I'm making between the two is this, is that self-righteousness is an attempt to convince God and others that I am holy. Self-righteousness is an attempt to convince God and others that I'm pure, that I'm righteous, etc. And so what do? I do all kinds of stuff to try to convince others that I'm really not what I find myself to be on the inside. That's self-righteousness. It's show. False righteousness, I think, is this. False righteousness is an attempt to convince ourselves that we're pure in heart. To convince ourselves that we're really holy or righteous. It's when we convince ourselves that though we have allowed sin to be mixed into our hearts, that we are still pure or righteous. Or even, we might even say, mostly pure or righteous. False righteousness is when we have allowed ourselves to have secret compartments in our lives to tuck away the sins that we are unwilling to let go of. Here, let me show you something real quick. Alana helped me with this. She's been asking me all morning what this is all about. She did a wonderful job folding this, so if I could get it out of my pocket, then that'd be great. Anybody ever seen one of these? I'll have to remember how to put my fingers in here. Anybody ever played with these when you were a kid? We won't say what they're called. What, y'all remember this game? Right? You write the little things on the outside. Usually it's about who you're going to marry or, you know, whatever it's going to be. And so you write some names on the outside and you do this and you count so many times and you open it up and you find even more out about all that. I think the human heart looks a whole lot like this. I think if we were to look inside, most of our hearts look like this morning. And here's what I've done. Because we are Christians and because we do want to feel holy and righteous, of course, on one of these little compartments that we have here, we're going to write God. I mean, we do put God first, right? And so he's got to have his little place here. And so we've put a little place in our heart here for God. And so we can open that up, and on the inside there, it's got things like church and Bible and prayer and all those other little things that we do for God. And there it is. Well, then we move this thing on around, and we've got another little compartment in our hearts here that says things we love. It's labeled like that, a little room that we have here. Things we love. And we can open that up, and that'll be things like family, hobbies, sports, hunting, fishing, whatever ladies like to do. And all other sorts of things that we really love. It could also just be other little things like, you know, certain people in our lives or just certain things that we love or enjoy. Anything like that would fit into this compartment. And so we hold that very dear to our hearts. Then we've got another little compartment over here for anger and grudges. And those are the people who have wronged us, and those are the things that have been done to us or said about us or said whatever has hurt us. And so we've stored those up in our heart as well, and we've got them in their own little secret container over here. And then I've got another little one here called secret. I guess I could put top secret there. And we're not going to talk about what's in there, because those are things we don't want anybody to know about. They're hidden. They exist. And they're locked away. But we don't talk about them. Now, really what we want everybody to see on the outside is God. And what we want to believe about ourselves is that our heart is for God. And what we want to convince everybody else of is that our heart is for God. But the truth is that in our hearts we've made all these little compartments for all these things that don't belong there. For a Christian, if you're a child of God, there is no place in the heart for some of the things that you see listed here. And this is really just a model of what's in you. But you see, a heart that's pure is not mixed with things like this. A heart that is pure has not been defiled by things like this. It has no place for things like this. Remember, we said pure means unmixed or unadulterated with any substance or material. The point is that we cannot have a heart that is mixed or adulterated with sin and claim to be pure in heart. It just does not work. We can't say that, yes, I would believe myself to be pure in heart, but then sit there and look at that thing I just gave you and say, yeah, I've got some stuff like that in my heart as well. It doesn't work. You can't be pure in heart and still have those things hidden. Purity, then, is holiness without exception. The pure heart are those who have decided that there is no place for sin in their lives. That there are going to be no secret compartments in which they are going to hide or tuck away different things in their lives. They allow all of the hidden apartments to be unfolded, and they present their whole hearts to God. So then, this is what a pure heart looks like. It's been unfolded. All the compartments have been cleansed. All those things we're holding on to, we've wiped them clean, or let God do that. And here we go. We say, God, this is my heart. And it's yours. And you fill it with what you want. You write on it what you want to be written. It's yours. That's what a pure heart is. Now, the problem that every one of us is going to face with this is that, like the previous Beatitudes, becoming pure in heart is not something we can do. And I'm sure some of us in our hearts may be feeling in panic mode right now because we realize our hearts don't look like that blank sheet of paper. It looks more like the other thing. And we realize there's some things in our heart that should not be there if we're really Christians. If we really know God, if we've really given Him our hearts. And so then the question is how then do we get pure in heart? How do we become pure in heart? How does a heart that is deceitful and wicked and permeated with sin, how does that heart become pure? See, really what has to take place there has to be a heart change. My dad is on transplant list right now. And his heart is diseased. And he's trying to medicate it right now. They're going to medicate it as long as they can, which basically just means that they cover up the symptoms. But that heart's diseased. And if he's going to continue on, that heart's going to have to come out. And so what's going to happen is a very skilled doctor is going to lay my dad down on the table eventually. And he's going to remove the old diseased heart that is not functioning properly. He's going to make the necessary cuts and he's going to lift that heart out and set it to the side. And he's going to take another heart that's working, that beats properly, that's not diseased, clean. And he's going to place that into my dad's body. We call it a heart transplant. And if someone like us who has a diseased heart, not this thing, the heart. If it's ever to change, we can't do it ourselves. We can medicate the symptoms. We can try to cover up what's really in there all we want. But eventually, there's going to have to be a heart transplant. The wonderful thing is that there's somebody who can do that. He's the great physician. This procedure can only be done by God. We can't do it ourselves. It shows us how dependent we are on God. It says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." But then we've got to depend on Him for a pure heart. How then do we become pure in heart? Well, I'll tell you. It starts with being poor in spirit. When we realize that there is no real righteousness in us, when we realize that in terms of spiritual goodness or holiness or righteousness, that we are completely bankrupt in and of ourselves. And so being poor in spirit, we realize the sin that is in our lives. We realize our poverty of spirit, and we begin to mourn over the sin that comes through our lives. Because we realize that we are in poverty, because daily we're mourning over any sin that may pass through, we also get a proper assessment of what we are and who we are. And that makes us meek. We stop looking at ourselves as being here, and we begin to look at ourselves in the terms of who we really are before God. And it produces a spirit of meekness in our lives. Once we have been rid of all self-righteousness or any self-righteousness, then we see that we begin hungering and thirsting, starving for the righteousness of God. We realize that we are not righteous, and if that righteousness is ever to take place in our life, it has to come from Him. And so starving and hungry and desiring to be filled, we look to God and we hunger for His righteousness. And guess what He does? He fills us with His righteousness. Being then filled with His righteousness, He begins to produce these good things in our life. He begins to produce mercy, one of the great attributes of God Himself. He begins to produce mercy through us. He begins to produce, as we see here in this beatitude, a pure heart. So then a pure heart does not come from me. It doesn't come from what I can do. It has to be something that I've become, something that I am. At salvation, I was emptied of all self-righteousness. I realized that I could not save myself. I realized that my righteousness would never add up. I fell before God a sinner. I looked at the cross and what He did for me there. And I cried out to Him, "God, I need You. I need Your salvation." You know what He did at that point? He created in me a clean, pure heart. That's the only place it can come from. Now, since salvation, let me say, my heart, if I am to be completely honest with you today, my heart still looks quite a bit like the one I showed you earlier. It's got some compartments there that don't belong. Now, I'm saved. It doesn't mean that I've lost that. It just means that I've allowed some things to be mixed in. But what my prayer should be is that God, who is a great cleanser of sins, who is so merciful, and His grace is so sufficient, that He would do His work in my heart and in my life and cleanse me and rid me of those things that I may have tucked away for myself. The pure in heart exhibit a single-minded devotion to God that stems from the internal cleansing created by following Jesus. Now let's talk just for a moment, very briefly, about what this last little phrase here is here. Blessed are the pure in heart. How do we get pure in heart? Well, it comes from God, of course, we've seen. He says, blessed are the pure in heart, but then the last phrase is, says, for they shall see God. As we consider this verse, there's one truth that we have to consider here, one truth that we find to be uncompromising in God's Word. That means there's no exceptions to this rule. And that truth is that holiness is a requirement for God's presence, that God will not allow sinfulness or wickedness to be in His presence. I want you to think about that first place that God created for man. It was a place where they could have a close relationship and close physical fellowship, I believe, with God Almighty. It was called the Garden of Eden. But something happened there in that garden. Sin took place. And when sin happened, they left. God can't allow sin to remain in His presence. And so holiness is a requirement for the presence of God. John tells us that God is light and there is no darkness in Him at all, and that He does not fellowship with darkness. He says that if we say that we have fellowship with Him but walk in darkness, we're liars. So then let's look at this verse. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are those whose hearts have been cleansed, for they shall see God. Now very quickly, I want to just comment on this phrase, they shall see God. I believe that this can happen in several ways. We're going to look at three. Two of those are in the here and now. For they shall see God now, here and now. One of the ways that this is possible is that we see Him in life. Listen, if my heart, if I've only got a little bitty compartment over here for God, and my heart is really filled with more of these other things, I want you to notice there were four compartments in that heart I showed you a while ago. Only one of them said God. He was outnumbered, wasn't he? And if I've only got a little compartment over here for God, and I've got all these other things that are in my heart, that's flowing through my mind, that are in my motives and in my behavior, and of course coming out into the way that I act and the things that I do, it's going to be very difficult for me to look around and see God working around me, see God in my life. It's going to be very hard for that to happen, isn't it? There are people, oh man, countless people who would come up to us and we would talk to them about God, and they perhaps would not believe in God, and so they say, their defense is this: give me evidence that God exists. And I just stand dumbfounded sometimes because I'm looking around and going, what else do you need? He's at work every day. He's here. He's present this morning. And some of us realize that. Some of us are somewhere else. I see it on your faces. I believe that the now, the seeing God in the now, also is in fellowship. Listen, there is a closeness with God that He wants us to be able to experience. We are not here on accident. We are not here for Him to watch us fail and so that He can condemn us. That's not why we're here. We are here for fellowship with God. God wants a close and personal relationship with us. But it's very hard if my wife and I's relationship, if something is between it, if in my heart, the heart that's supposed to be beating for her, if in my heart I've got her tucked away in this little place, but I've got all these other things there in my heart as well, how do you think our relationship's going to go? There's going to be some problems, aren't there? The same is true with God. Our heart that is supposed to be beating for Him, our heart that is supposed to be pure before Him so that we can have close fellowship with Him. If we have all these other things in our heart, fellowship is not going to be an issue in our life. It's not going to be something that we're experiencing. We're going to feel a distance from God. And of course, there's going to be some bitterness there, and there's going to be some sadness and some problems that come in our life. Why? Because we were made for fellowship with God. And if some other things have taken place of that, then it's going to produce some sadness and some grief in our lives. Let's remember what that word blessed means. Blessed is joy inner joy regardless of outer circumstances. But then I believe this speaks to a third sighting of God as well, and that's in the later. We can see God in life. We can see God in the sense of our fellowship with Him and His workings in our life and in our own hearts. But listen, there's a third one here that I think we should be most concerned with is, and that is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I believe this is also a reference to seeing God in heaven. Listen, there's not one person that's going to stand before God in heaven that has not first had a heart that's been cleansed. That has to take place first. A heart that is still sinful. A heart that has never been washed white and washed clean will not see God. Again, that's not something you can do. It's not something you have the power, the ability to do. But it's something that God does for you and in you. When you realize the fact that you are not able, that you cannot earn salvation, you cannot earn heaven, you cannot earn forgiveness, but it's something that is completely extended to us through God's love and what flows from His love, grace and mercy. God's love was so great toward us that He gave His only begotten Son, so that when we had sinned and when we were vile and were corrupt and were wicked before Him, His Son died on the cross and took the penalty for our sin. That whosoever believes in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. I think that's truly what it means when it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. It's not what you're doing. It's what you are. Have you been to Jesus? Have you come to Him by faith, trusting for His salvation and His forgiveness so that He can wash you white as snow? If not, that's something that desperately needs to take place as soon as possible. I want us to